Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Drew Dintick of NBC Sports, the Deep Dive podcast. He will join us. We will talk about the NBA draft, the first pick, the first five picks, some over-unders, get his thoughts on some other things too, because he's actually betting the Olympics, the Tour de France, and maybe we'll talk about some football with Drew. So excited to talk to Drew, but I'll start here with the draft. And I'll preface all of this by saying, by the time you listen to this, the information changes so quickly with the draft. By the time you listen to this, maybe everything I've said is obvious, and maybe everything I've said is just completely wrong. It could be one or the other. We'll see what happens here. The last time I was on, it was Klingon was moving towards Risachet in terms of the odds for number one pick. Since then, the Klingon odds have cooled off here. Windhorst went on one of the shows on ESPN and said, hey, you know, Klingon, I would be pretty surprised. It's almost, I forget what the word, but long shot. It'll be a long shot if he goes first, and it's probably between Risachet. He still thought Sarr was in the mix because Sarr is a kid that was, and again, it's all international kids. It's all guys you never heard of, which really hurts the intrigue of the draft. Unless you're betting it, nobody's heard of any of these guys, except the UConn guys, a couple guys here and there. Nobody's heard of any of these players, which really hurts it. But he made the point that Sarr is trying to direct himself towards number two at Washington because there's more playing time, more chance to shoot, more chance to play right away, that kind of thing. And he wouldn't work out for Atlanta, but Atlanta would still take him anyway. But Klingon going at one would seem like a stretch. Seems like Quinn Snyder was pushing for Klingon, but Quinn Snyder's going to lose out on that debate. Just doesn't have the pull in the organization. That's the thing you have to remember too. You hear these leaks, this team likes that guy, that team likes this. There's a lot of chefs in the kitchen sometimes with this stuff, where there's a GM has to say, the coach, the scouts, and a certain portion of the front office might like a certain guy, but there's a lot of times there's not consensus. There's a divide, especially a year like this year where none of the players are good. It's not like last year with Wembanyama where, hey, a few of the guys in the building for Atlanta like Risachet, the coach likes Klingon, but there's a couple guys who like, who knows, Castle or Reed Shepard, and you know, things can get divided, and it's about who wins out in the end. So as of now, I would think it's going to be Risachet, but there's enough uncertainty. There's just a lack of clarity where if you're going to bet, if you have no bets and you're coming in this with no bets and you want some action, I would just take a stab at some longer shots. Just, you know, like Risachet is the favorite. I think he's the rightful favorite, but like, I don't know. This could be, if you're ever going to get a year with a bombshell, and Castle goes one or Shepard goes one. I mean, the reason people like Klingon going one is he's got at least a skill set you can wrap your arm around. Hey, I know he's going to be able to defend the rim and rebound and block shots. Reed Shepard's got a skill set. Hey, I know at least he can shoot. Castle's got the skill set. Hey, he's 6'7", he can defend. So, like, again, I think it's probably Risachet going one, but if we're sitting here Friday talking about, wow, what a bombshell, I can't believe this guy went first overall, this is a year where it would happen. So, tread lightly. I think anything is possible with this. And just be careful what you hear. Here's the other thing too. I think the NBA, I know the NBA wants to preserve the interest of the draft. So I think they're going to do as much as possible to keep Woj under lid, keep Shams under lid here. Where, hey, don't leak it. Don't ruin the draft here. Let's at least go to the start of the draft with people not knowing who's going to go the first pick. And you know, maybe you leak it 10, 15 minutes before. That's one thing, but you want to at least build the drama. Especially a year with just such a lack of familiarity with these players. You want to not kill your TV product. I mean, it used to be for years. You know who was going to be first until you turned on the TV and somebody picked it. Now you had an idea some years as opposed to others, but the leaks have really hurt the draft. And again, you go back to this idea of just the lack of familiarity. Other than Klingon and Castle, there's just, and even the college guys aren't in college that long where you get to know these guys. I remember growing up watching the draft, you knew every player. Once in a while, there's a European guy you never heard of, but for the most part, it was all guys on teams you heard of. These guys stayed in college for 2, 3, 4 years, and you got to know the players. You knew there was a familiarity. There's not that anymore. It's especially this year. It's all one and done guys. It's all international guys that nobody's ever heard of, nobody's ever seen. So it really does hurt the interest of the draft to not know who these guys are picking. It's hard to have opinions or takes on, oh, I can't believe they picked this guy or that guy. It's just, you're all going based on hearsay. Nobody's ever seen a lot of these players. I mean, Risachet and Sarr, and I mean, you just go down the line, Tovich or Joe, the kid that sounds like Jokic's name. I mean, I think it's Topic. It's just, it's a lot of unfamiliarity. It's a lot of unfamiliarity and a lot of guesswork. So weird draft, weird year. Next year, Cooper Flagg is going to be the first pick. He's a generational prospect. always hesitate when you hear that because you never know. We heard Trevor Lawrence was generational. I mean, the media likes to overrate these guys sometimes, but it does sound like Cooper Flagg is the real deal, and teams are going to be basically tripping over themselves, losing games on purpose to get as many ping pong balls as possible to draft Flagg. Much is the case last year with Wembanyama, but this is not the case this year with a weaker draft. And again, it adds a different wrinkle to the draft because Atlanta thinks they can be a playoff team. Atlanta thinks, hey, why can't we be the Pacers of last year? If we pick right, we got Murray, we got Young, and we can, you know, win a round in the playoffs, then who knows? Somebody gets hurt, we can win two rounds. So it's a weird year where Atlanta is not a typical rebuilding team, and plus the weakness of the draft makes for a weird draft. But should be fun. Always a fun night. Definitely hurts it a little bit that we don't know any of these players, but if you have bets, that'll certainly keep you interested. And we'll see what bets Drew Dinsick has. That is next. This is the Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. You can catch him on the Deep Dive podcast with Andy Molitor, Bet the Edge, NBC Sports. He is back. It is Drew Dinsick. Drew, what's up, man? Fun time of the year. Thanks for coming on.
Of course, absolutely. And thank you as always for having me. And hopefully we can give the listeners some alpha today.
Yeah, it's by the time people are listening to this, it will be draft day. I guess we'll start at the top, and I guess I'll preface this by saying, by the time people listen to this, what we're about to say might be very obvious or might be very wrong. Things change quickly with the draft, but as we're recording this, what's your best guess as to what happens with the first pick?
Best guess is it's Reese Sachet. Best guess is that it's Sar number two. Best guess is that we have a trade between three and six, and that Reed Shepard goes three. Then four, I'm going to just take a stab in the dark that it's Castle. Five, I think, is pretty likely to be Buzelis, regardless of what happens one through four. And then six, I'm going to send Dalton Connect to Houston.
All right. And there's a boy. He just answered all my questions. That's it. We're done. Done with the podcast.
You said what's the most likely, but now yeah, how likely is that?
That's the next question. How confident are you? 5%
chance that happens.
We'll start with the top at number one.
That's really the key for this year, right? Like last year, it was a no-brainer who was first, and the entire game was figuring out who was second, and that was locked in pretty early, and then you kind of could put the pieces together after that. This year, I think because of the sort of, you know, relative weakness of the front office and Atlanta, the fact that they are kind of in a little bit of a transitioning phase as far as their franchise, and the fact that, you know, the perceived number one talent in the draft and Alexander Sarr, you know, kind of stiff-armed them, like all of that makes the number one pick hugely uncertain. I'm not exactly sure why the Hawks want Reese Sachet, if we're being honest. Okay, fine. they have no draft capital for years to come. I would be, you know, I would be entertaining any and all offers for hitting the reset button, because you're not competing in the East anytime soon with this core, and there's not a franchise changing player here at the top. So we'll see. It wouldn't be my pick. I definitely don't think he's a guy that you can even really build. You know, is he the third or fourth best player on a championship contender? Maybe. It seems like for whatever reason, that's the direction these guys are leaning. And, you know, these big liquid markets that exist offshore now, it's getting bet now that limits are sort of up. So I kind of give up that's just the way that they're going to go. And then until I hear kind of sincere news otherwise that they have changed direction, I think it's fine to kind of operate in that framework.
And there was a lot of steam this weekend on Klingon to go first. That's kind of out the window now. Windhorst said on Monday, hey, it'd be pretty surprised. He's not a guy who's going to go out on limbs, and he's just relaying what he hears. Hey, I'd be very surprised. Not that it's impossible, but probably a long shot now that Klingon goes first.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. And I think the Klingon steam to go first, from what I heard, was Quinn Snyder was the guy that was kind of advocating for him as the pick. And of the guys in the room whose opinion matters now in Atlanta, he's maybe the fifth, sixth guy down the list. You know, who knows if Quinn Snyder is coaching this team at Christmas, you know, like it's a very fluid situation there in terms of power. And, for whatever it's worth, as far as I could tell, Klingon is Quinn Snyder kind of lost out.
All right. Do you buy, how about the Edie steam? I'll go in that direction. Edie is, it's funny. There was a time where Edie teams would be tanking to draft Edie with the first pick. And there were other drafts recently where like he wouldn't go in the first round, but there's a lot of optimism now, at least from what I'm hearing, top 15, maybe top 10. Are you buying that? And what do you think is a possible landing spot here for Edie?
A little bit of a coin flip that he's a lottery pick here, for in my opinion. I think his total sitting at 16 and a half is just about right. I know there's a little bit of juice in his under, but I have no action there. His team in general is telling people he has a promise to be taken in the lottery. But I gotta tell you, like, there are enough kind of projects with higher ceilings that I think the, you know, kind of 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 are gonna take swings on, that I'm having trouble really figuring out where his home is. A player like Klingon is an interesting case in particular, because the way I just kind of laid out the top six in terms of what I think is the most likely, I didn't say Klingon. Like, he could be there at seven, right? And I think the, you know, kind of key question really would be, does a team that didn't think they had a chance at Klingon all of a sudden realize, well, wait a minute, like, we want a big, we could move up from 13, 14 to seven and have a much better, or, you know, player with a perceived much higher ceiling. Like, you know, that could throw some cold water on, you know, whoever his suitor is in terms of the promise that was made. And again, because this is a weak draft overall, I think, for my taste, taking swings on some guys that are less proven, that have more potential for growth and play a more versatile roles in a championship contender, make more sense. The Ron Hollins of the world, the Tadajane Salons of the world, like, these guys are question marks. Nikola Topic, like, coming off an ACL, obviously, so he has question marks, but could these guys develop into, more contributory pieces than a guy like Edie, who's probably at his peak? You know, he's developed. Like, I don't know what else you're getting out of him at the NBA level. And, you know, I think that's what's ultimately going to handicap him. So 16 to 20 would be my expected range, but the chance that he, you know, goes 16th, I don't think you can dismiss that.
Do you think, with betting being legal and the fact that, look, Shams and Woj, there's more incentive to keep the information under wraps, do you think we'll get to about the time the draft starts? I think it's, what, 8 o'clock on Wednesday, and we're not going to know, or do you think it's going to leak beforehand?
I think it's already leaked. I think a bunch of this stuff is already leaked. I'm looking at some of these markets where you can get big bets down, and, like, you know, Bezelis to go fifth overall, minus 215. Like, Castle to go fourth overall, minus 180. Shepherd, third overall, minus 175. Like, you know, the fact that these are such such huge minus numbers this far down the board, to me, because it's a weak draft, because there wasn't really as much interest in trading, because there isn't as much, our future depends on making the right decision here, there's a little bit of a casual nature, I feel like, in the way it's being approached. And, you know, the communication between teams and agents seems to have kind of, reached its peak volume today here on Tuesday. And I think we're starting to see a crystallization, because, like, you know, again, like, if Detroit is at the point where they are confident that they're just going to take Zealous, like, well, number one, they know, or they have high likelihood that he's going to be there at five. And number two, they know who else is going to be there, and they've, you know, kind of come around to this. And they know they're not expecting a surprise, and they're not, neither entertaining a trade down. And, you know, so, you know, I think at this point, whether it becomes public via Woj tweet or Shams tweet, I think is less likely, but certainly there are people who are operating in these markets who are playing with confidence if they're betting these prices.
How about any big name players you think change teams? You think either a draft day trade or July 1st is coming around the corner here? Do you think we're going to get, like, a shakeup, or is it, I feel like it's drying up a little bit, where Paul George might go back? And I thought at the end of the season, some of these teams, like, how are the Suns going to run it back? Well, it appears like they will. How are the Clippers going to run it back? Well, it appears like they will. Do you think we're getting a shakeup here?
The NBA always surprises you, so I'm not going to say it's going to be a boring offseason, but I definitely think that some of the potential for a heavy-duty turnover is starting to feel less likely. The key name to watch in terms of dominoes falling is Paul George to the Sixers, obviously. If he elects to just take more money and stay in LA, which is sort of where the tea leaves are trending, then the Sixers get interesting because they desperately need a third banana on that team. They're not bringing back Tobias Harris, from what I could tell you. And if they decide, okay, well, no Paul George, our next best option is, and they set their sights on some guy that nobody really thought was likely to be moved. And you know, that sets off a whole chain reaction, like what we had with Porzingis and Dame Lillard and Drew Holiday last year. Like, yeah, okay, that we could definitely see something like that, where there's a little bit of a reshuffling at the very top of the East. But I think broadly, I'm watching out for Trae Young for sure. It sounds like Atlanta is not highly motivated to move him, but is absolutely exploring options. I have, you know, definitely kind of curious where the Lakers go in terms of restaff, you know, repopulating their talent pool. If they go for a third, you know, quote unquote star, I'm interested to see what happens to Klay Thompson. He's obviously a guy that fits and has an immediate role on a number of kind of up and coming young teams like the Magic. Dying to know what the Cavaliers are going to do. It sounds likely that Donovan Mitchell is going to stay in Cleveland, which is a little bit of an upset, but you know, they got a pretty clear and obvious signal that Mitchell and Garland don't feel fit well together, and that you know, Mobley and Allen don't fit well, especially well together. And, you know, kind of intrigued what Cleveland does to reshuffle things. But again, like, does any of this move championship equity aside from Paul George to Philly? No. I think that's kind of the key for those who are listening and betting.
How about Olympics? I know this is a slow time of year for some, but you're betting Olympics, Tour de France, take it whatever direction you want to go. A couple Olympics bets.
Oh, sure.
And here, Tour de France.
Well, the first week of the Olympics, the Tour de France, I think is actually, it's actually going to be a snoozer this year. Tadej Pogacar of Slovenia, I think, runs away with it. The Olympics is going to be exciting. First week for me is all about handicapping the swimming events. We have four or five golds a night for the first week that are all kind of individual and relay events in swimming. And yeah, if you're curious, right now I have the U.S. as very likely to win four. Those four would be Katie Ledecky winning the 1500 free, Gretchen Walsh winning the 100 fly. Gretchen Walsh set a world record at the 100 fly at trials, and she looked like she had even more in the tank. She was incredible. So doubt anyone's beating her. The men's and women's 4x100 medley relay, I think, will also go gold to USA. The could happens for me, which are like 50 to 90% likely, include Ledecky getting a second gold in the 800 free, Kate Douglas, who I think has more in the tank in both the 2IM and the 2 breast. Our best backstroker on the women's side is Reagan Smith. She is definitely a coin flip to win both the 100 and the 200 back. Our best backstroker on the men's side is Ryan Murphy. He's a coin flip to win the 100 and the 200 back. And then we could see Caleb Dressel defend his title in the 100 fly, and Matt Fallon, breakout star and potentially in the 200 breaststroke for us. So all of those, I think, are at least 50% chance to happen for Team USA. And if we get half of those home, then we're going to be looking at about 9 or 10 gold medals.
How the hell do you handicap this stuff?
So you want to know the true and honest, yes, answer is, you're looking at two key things. What is the fastest time swum in a given discipline this year, right? What are their progressions this year? And what is their overall record in international competitions between last Olympics and this Olympics? Because, you know, these swimmers, you know, they train to peak for the Olympics period. That happens every 4 years. The international meets in between, there's sort of quasi peaks, right? Softer peaks. And I think you can look at sort of the World Championships from 2023 as sort of the dress rehearsal for the Olympic Games. The World Championships 2024 are a complete toss, in my opinion. But the 2023 ones are the dress rehearsal. And then you watch their swims from this season. You watch their progression. You make sure they're continuing to take steps forward. And that gives you signal that they're about to kind of reach their ceiling. And then, you know, the same things are happening. The other kind of keys to watch are, what does the Australia qualifying, Australia trial qualifying look like? How are they swimming? And then what is what's going on in Europe? We have a very, you know, obvious, there's like a curtain over what's going on in China. We have no clue how those swimmers are swimming. So that's always a huge wild card. But, you know, it's pretty straightforward to look at world's fastest times done this year and have a general understanding of these swimmers are at or near the top right now, and they have more to give to try to come up with what a likely outcome is for the Olympic Games. So it's a really fun opportunity. And honestly, it's there's probably no closer comparison to Olympic swimming betting than horse racing. Like, it's, you know, it's exactly like the, you know, the event itself lasts a minute. They're training 4 years for this. They're trying to peak, you know, get their bodies and performances in peak, you know, kind of hit that high point in that moment, in that time window, at that event, which is kind of the same sort of way that, you know, the horse trainers do for, you know, the big, the Breeders' Cup and the Kentucky Derby and whatnot. So a lot of the same kind of handicapping philosophy applies.
All right, last one, football. What do you got? I don't think the deep dive prods, usually the previews start like middle of the summer, so I'm guessing you start those pretty soon. You're going to be with Andy Molitor. He's going to interrupt you. I'm going to tweet you that he needs to stop interrupting you. It's a vicious cycle, but it's just part of the summer. What are just like one or two, I don't know, hot takes, controversial opinions you might have about the NFL season?
Yeah, so the deep dive previews will start the week after July 4th. We'll be doing one division a week, and we'll break them up into, you know, per you know, one team or two teams. We record them two at a time, but I think we split them up and do one team per release. But controversial opinion for you. I think the NFC stinks. I think it's terrible. I think almost all of these teams have taken step backwards, except for the NFC North, which looks freaking awesome. And I think if you can suss out based on quality of just, you know, just in general, like put together a fair price on Green Bay versus Detroit, forget about betting NFC North future, forget about, you know, betting win totals, just take that opinion to the NFC championship market and get a better number, because I think almost certainly your NFC North winner is going to be your likely Super Bowl representative from the NFC this year. And I know that, you know, certainly dismissing San Francisco is probably stupid, but their schedule looks quite a lot tougher than it was last year. And I think they've taken a step back on defense, on top of it seems like they're trying to blow up that core of wide receiver, you know, strength, which I just don't understand. But San Francisco, I'm a little bit concerned about what's going on with them. And then the NFC East, I think, looks off to me. I think everybody's got huge, huge questions and demerits to figure out if they're going to contend, and the NFC South is a joke. So NFC North, rather than bet that division winner, if you like Detroit, if you like Green Bay, take that right to the NFC championship market and get a better number, in my opinion.
And yeah, there's a lot of hype on Philly. You're not buying the Philly hype?
Not even remotely. No.
Wow. I think you might be the first person I've heard to say that, because it's been a one-way train of Philly's better than Dallas. Yeah, go ahead.
So check this out. So 2 years ago, right, Philly gets to the Super Bowl. Okay. Nice job. You look at their schedule of who their opponent, the opposing quarterbacks, was that year.
Oh, it was a joke.
It was a joke. Their defense was legitimately propped up because they played no one. They get exposed in the Super Bowl against Mahomes. And then last year, you know, it was kind of finally proof of concept that, like, hey, this is not working. They completely try to revamp the secondary on the fly. Yeah, they got some talented players. Yeah, they're bringing in Vic Fangio. But there are still huge questions at the linebacker level for the Eagles. And on top of that, their schedule does not look especially easy. So I think the defense is still a big question mark in Philly. And even more than that, like, Kellen Moore is the answer. I'm not sure if he's the answer. I don't know what the question is. I've never really been especially impressed with what he's bringing to the table in terms of vision. You're replacing Jason Kelce, who I think was sort of the most important piece in terms of being able to get those free fourth down conversions. Jalen Hurts is now eating up AJ Brown eating up a huge amount of the cap. So, you know, going to be tough to continue to, you know, kind of backfill with talent around these guys. And, you know, and then Nick Sirianni certainly does not seem to be well liked, at least in that locker room. And there are warning signs everywhere around the Eagles. They may ultimately still win the NFC East, but I got to tell you, I'm not buying that there's going to be a big old bounce back for them.
Fascinating. Yeah, I think you really are of the, I don't know, again, just anecdotal 6, 8, 10 people. Everyone's just, hey, Philly has overtaken Dallas. Dallas didn't do much in the offseason. Eagles get Barkley, but it's you make a strong case. Any awards? Have you bet any awards? I feel like these numbers just MVP. Some of these, with betting being more legal and more discussed, they're not hanging any long shots that are really live, that are super intriguing. I don't know if you feel differently.
Can't take a ton of credit for this because I'm coattailing my co-host on Bet the Edge, Jay Croucher, but Breece Hall, Offensive Player of the Year, is solid. I think he has the chance to be sort of the kind of featured role in that offense. But they made so many investments on the offensive line, and I think Breece Hall is going to be it's kind of these the fantasy guys are already onto this, right? Like, he's going top 3 fantasy picks. So, you know, he's in the Christian McCaffrey range, yet his price to win Offensive Player of the Year is like 4 times McCaffrey. So I think that's going to be a fun one.
Wow. What number did you get on that?
Let me take a look, but I think it was 30-1. What do you think?
Yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds about right.
Yeah, I got 30-1 on that one.
Wow.
I would play it again still at current prices, which are around 20-1, I think. I realistically think he should be in that top tier. I don't think this is going to go to a wide receiver this year.
Getting excited. Got like 4 or 5 weeks till the Hall of Fame game, so it'll be here before you know it.
Yeah, well, oh my goodness, is it really that close?
August 1st is the Hall of Fame game, so
oh my god, I think
it's going to be here. Once it's here, you know, it kind of goes by fast, but once it's here, man, it's here. Drew, I appreciate it, man. Let everyone know where they can find you.
Oh, definitely check me out at @whale_capper on Twitter, and of course the Deep Dive Pod, as well as Bet the Edge for NBC.
All right. Appreciate some time. Good luck. And I mean this sincerely. Good luck on the draft tomorrow. Let's do well here.
Gonna need it.
All right. That will do it. Thank you to Drew Dinsick. We will be back Friday. Talk to you guys then.